It is right at the 9:45 mark, so I will welcome our KPTZ listeners and welcome, of course, to Dr. Locke and Willie Bentz. And I will hand it off to you, Dr. Locke.
Okay. Well, good morning. So starting with the numbers, COVID cases continue to drop pretty dramatically nationwide. The U.S. is down 45% over the last 2 weeks. So to now around 22,000 cases a day, which is still a lot of cases of disease, but dramatically less than a tenth really of what we were seeing at the peak January. In Washington State, unfortunately, we have been dropping, but much slower than the nation's rate, and so we have moved up in the ranking. And Washington State currently has the fourth highest rate among states and territories. Or if you exclude territories, if you exclude the U.S. Virgin Islands, we have the third highest state case rate. So Washington has only dropped 11%, but it is coming down and fairly dramatically in places like King County, but much less so in Spokane and several counties in Western Washington, notably Cowlitz and Wakayak, Cowlitz and Lewis, still have very high rates in the 200 to 300 cases per 100,000. So it's there's a lot of variability around the state, and it's starting to correlate with vaccination rates within counties. So the counties that have the highest vaccination rates increasingly are having the lowest COVID rates. And Jefferson County is certainly at the leader of that pack. So in Jefferson County, our rate went up just a small amount. It went from 12.5 to 15.7 cases per 100,000. So there were five cases in the last 2 weeks. And that's among the lowest in the state. San Juan, Clallam, Jefferson County have consistently been among the lowest in the rate. And it's no coincidence that we have the highest vaccination rates. Clallam County rates have been coming down as well at 42 per 100,000. And then Kitsap has dropped below the 100 mark, which is really good. So they are at 90 per 100,000. So throughout the region, we're dropping. San Juan County is now the leader in terms of vaccination, both for first doses and fully vaccinated. But Jefferson County is in a solid second. So when we look at the total population of Jefferson County, a little over 64% have had at least one vaccination, and 60.5% are fully vaccinated. So that's a really impressive number. And the state is still publishing the 16-plus vaccination rates, because this is a metric that the governor is using. But it's actually no longer is the measure of eligibility, eligible population, because 12 and older, of course, is now the eligible population. But of that rate, the governor is shooting for if those who are 16 and older, if at least 70% have at least one dose, that's the signal to remove statewide restrictions. It's unlikely at this point that Washington State will achieve that threshold before the end of June. However, Jefferson County is already there. Jefferson County is 72.4% for that metric. So we're above the 70%. And as I was starting to mention, the latest way to incentivize people to get vaccinated is entering them into lotteries. Which a number of states have done and have documented some success. It does stimulate vaccination rates for a relatively low cost. And so Washington State has started to do this in a campaign that's called a Shot of a Lifetime. And it's enrolling everyone who's been vaccinated so far. So everyone who's in the Department of Health vaccination registry will be entered into this lottery. The first drawing will be tomorrow for a $250,000 prize. And then there'll be a weekly drawing on Tuesdays for a month. And then on July 13th, there will be a drawing for a $1 million prize. And there were some preliminary reports out of King County that vaccination sites were seeing an increase in number of people coming and requesting vaccinations. So heads up to Willie. We may see an increase in demand, and if that's the case, that's great. But as the one of the highest vaccinated counties in the state, we have less people who are really available to be vaccinated. By my estimate, we probably have 15% of the population is never going to get vaccinated. They're just opposed to the concept. And the other 15% is mostly children, which we hope will get vaccinated, you know, as they become eligible. And there are some adults in there too. So we won't quit trying, but we're really past the mass vaccination stage where we can get 300 or 500 people together in one day and all get vaccinated. It's going to be we're going to be dealing with much smaller numbers, but we want to make the vaccine very accessible to people at the point they decide to take the plunge. And putting this all together, the pandemic is starting to emerge in a new shape, and that is it's really two pandemics. One is among the vaccinated, where there's been these dramatic decreases in case rates and death rates. And then among the unvaccinated, where things are, case rates are still as high as they were back in January. And in fact, just this last week, King County published some statistics that 97% of their new COVID cases were in people who were unvaccinated. So that's the new pandemic, and it's largely being driven by these variant infections. Currently in Washington, about 75% of the COVID cases are what was previously known as the UK variant, and now the variants are all getting new names. So the UK variant is now considered the Alpha variant, the South African variant is now being called the Beta. The Brazilian is Gamma variant, and the variant that arose in India is known as the Delta variant, and the California variants are known as the Epsilon variants. And so in Washington State, it's mostly the Alpha variant that was first detected in the United Kingdom and the Epsilon variants from California. But these forms of coronavirus are significantly more transmissible. And so behaviors that people might have gotten away with in the past year are less likely, or you're more likely to get infected with the new variants. And we're especially seeing this in household clusters. So when someone gets a variant infection, we're seeing much higher attack rates, percentages of people in a household who become infected. And this is just going to be the new normal, is that, and unfortunately, we expect it to accelerate even a bit more as the various masking and capacity size restrictions disappear at the end of this month. That for the unvaccinated, that will mean an increased risk of exposure, because you will have more of a chance of interacting indoors with other people who are unvaccinated without masks on. So that's something for people to factor in. Hopefully it'll be a motivation to get vaccinated, but if not, to continue wearing masks in indoor settings if you're unvaccinated, and in fact, consider more protective masks, such as KN95 masks or N95 masks. So, and then other news, the data is still suggesting that the vaccines are protective against the different variants, but it requires high antibody levels for them to be effective against all the different variants. And so that's the notion of whether we're going to need booster doses at some times is still a very active consideration. There's some data on that that's going to be published this month that will shed more light on it. But right now, there's no official booster dose being planned, but we're preparing for it on the vaccination front, that at anywhere from 9 months to a year from the initial dose, it may be necessary, as long as the variants are circulating, to be thinking of some kind of booster dose regimen. And then, despite all this, we're still projecting that case rates will continue to drop in Washington State over this next month. It mostly has to do with what's called seasonality, is respiratory viruses just don't spread as well at this time of year. People are outdoors more often. The weather is drier for the most part. And so it's not favorable for viral transmission. And also the vaccination rates are getting to the point that they're having a significant effect on dampening transmission. So both of those things are working in our favor. But we still have to be mindful of the fact that there's a significant part of the population is not yet eligible for vaccination, children under 12. And then there's the issue of about 4% of the population are either immunosuppressed because of some disease they're dealing with, or because of a cancer therapy that they're on, or some other medical reason. And this is a group that we strongly recommend get vaccinated, but we're never sure on a case-by-case basis how effective that vaccine is going to be. Because we know when your immune system is impaired, it does not respond as well to any vaccination. So we're really stressing to those who have immune suppression, you should definitely get vaccinated, but you should also take precautions. This taking off your mask in indoor spaces may not be a good idea if you can't trust your immune system to produce a robust response to the vaccine. And so we have, Willie and I have the exact same number of questions today from KPTZ. So I have two and he has two, but the commissioners can go first.
Okay. Well, I told you my challenge and I'll just come out and say it, but probably Port Townsend school district families received notification of the first COVID case in the high school here. And, for those of us with kids hoping to graduate on Friday, just curious if that's going to affect graduation plans or mitigations at all for graduation.
I don't have the full information on that yet. I will be pursuing it today, but based on what I know at this point, the answer is no. That there's should be no changes in plan, and that we have a number of ways to through testing protocols and our various masking and distancing that whatever circumstances we're dealing with, we will still be able to pull off a graduation safely. But if there if there are people who are exposed and in quarantine, that would limit their ability to participate, but that would be on an individual basis. I'll find out more about that today. By and large, graduations, you know, they are starting around the state, we're employing there's some very specific standards that have been put out statewide that we're adhering to in terms of capacity sizes. Something that's really encouraging to me is a relatively high percentage of Port Townsend high school students appear to be fully vaccinated. We really started on that in late April. So those who are motivated to get vaccinated have now had enough time to get both shots and be 2 weeks post the second shot. So that's great. That for those students, even if they were exposed to a fellow student, they would not need to do anything. They would not need to be quarantined. They would not need to restrict their activity. The only exception being if they actually got symptoms of COVID, then we would want to test them. But other than that, that's one of the benefits of being vaccinated is you don't have to quarantine after exposure.
Great. I'm thrilled to hear you don't anticipate major changes at this point.
No, and we'll be going over what we know about those exposures today. And then I meet with the school superintendents every Tuesday morning. And so we'll be, you know, if there's any changes that need to happen, we'll kind of nail that down tomorrow morning with the superintendents.
Great. Heidi?
I have one. You may have already answered this question that came from Sunrise Coffee directly, Dr. Locke, but they sent a question to you and copied me last week. And they said, if and when we open our coffee house to the public, can we ask our customers to show us a vaccination card?
The answer is yes. You cannot compel them to do so, but then you could it gets a little tricky if you want to exclude them from the business based on their unwillingness to show you their vaccination card. There would be ways to do that. For instance, if a business wanted to have a vaccination-only event, that is allowed, and it's allowed. Then you can do it at full capacity. It can be both unmasked and at full capacity. Those regulations were originally envisioned for spectator type events, music concerts, but that the same concept, I think, could be applied to a business. And then it would be that it's a requirement for entry into this vaccination only event. If a business has a section for the unvaccinated, that is to say a section that correspond where there's masking required and the physical distancing and capacity limits are respected, then it might be hard to exclude people from a unvaccinated section. So some places are doing that. They have vaccinated and unvaccinated sections, and the vaccinated sections have higher capacity limits. And this is all kind of in transition over this month, and most of this is going to go away by the end of June. So everything's going to be back to normal capacity and without indoor masking mandates. That's what it's looking like. Although, as I'll answer in a KPTZ question, it might not look exactly like that in the workplace for employees for some different reasons.
Greg, any questions?
Yeah, I have two questions. First, I was wondering, Dr. Locke, there's a bunch of other statewide incentives for vaccinations, you know, hunting licenses and fishing licenses. Are those all accessed out of the Department of Health database, or how do you get those other incentives?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I do not know the answer to that question. Very likely, Department of Health is is acting as a clearinghouse for that. And hopefully that information is on their doh.wa.gov site, but I have not seen the specifics of that. And I think those are great incentives, and people should take advantage of them. But how specifically to do that, I don't know.
And then my follow-up to that is I'm wondering, should we look at possible local incentives for, you know, getting us to the finish line for those that aren't vaccinated yet? Any local incentives that might help? I mean, I don't know. I'd put 10 bucks in for a bounty for someone to, if we could put $100 in to get someone to, for that last decision changer.
Well, I think anything is worth trying. I mean, the stakes are so high with this that it is so important to get the vaccination rates as high as we can that any reasonable idea is worth trying. And so we are open to ideas as to how to make vaccines more accessible. I think the team at DEM has been really creative and really dedicated to doing what it takes to mount these pop-ups, often on fairly short notice. I think we've got the motivated volunteers to make the vaccine accessible. We just need good ideas as how to do it. And what I've been especially thinking about is kind of events, you know, that at free drinks or street parties or, you know, do something where there's a social incentive to get vaccinated. Ultimately, anything that works is worth trying. And the way you at least I try to get ideas of what works is to look around the country and see what other people have done and of those things, what has caused measurable increases in vaccination rates. And along those lines, the lotteries have really seemed to cause a bump in vaccination uptake. And that's why more and more states are doing it.
It's exciting to hear that we're also those fully vaxxed already are still eligible for the lottery too. So folks don't need the incentive, but that's great. And then my other question is another question we got, I think all the electeds, but you did not get this last week, Dr. Locke, and I said I would ask it. And I think in recognition of us, you know, hitting that 72.4% vaccinated number, it's a good question. I'm going to try to answer it myself horseshoe story, or metaphor, but I'll read the question and then give my answer and then I would love to hear yours. So the question is, why are there still COVID restrictions in Jefferson County when the state and federal government has removed most restrictions? And to me, on Friday, I realized that I was not having allergies, but that I had caught a cold. I think I'm getting sloppy, I guess. You know, I was kind of the mind that I had infectious disease controls in my own personal life that were going to pretty much keep me cold free. And I guess I don't anymore because I did get a cold on Friday. And then to me, it just seems like any good horseshoes throw, follow through is the most important part of the body motion of throwing horseshoes. And so to me, the follow through in dealing with this COVID is as important as any other phase. But I would love to hear your thoughts on that question and our 72.4% vaccinated rate. Can we just open everything up?
Well, we are progressively opening things up. Jefferson County was one of the few counties that did have a local masking mandate. San Juan, King County, and Kittitas are some of the others. And I elected to continue it mostly for the benefit of merchants and that so they would not be put in the place of being kind of the mask police where they had to decide who was vaccinated and who wasn't, because we're the criticism of the CDC recommendations and how the state adopted it is that it puts a lot of burden on the the merchants, because people who are unvaccinated are supposed to still be wearing masks indoors. And how do you tell? So I just decided during this transition period, it would be less stress on the merchants to do that, especially given the fact that we're now in the tourist season and we're having a lot of people from out of area, and especially areas where there's much higher COVID rates are coming into the county. And so it would be safer for all concerned if those out of town visitors were wearing masks. And I was actually downtown in Port Townsend yesterday, and you know, the compliance seemed to be excellent, and you know, people were very mellow about it. So there is protection from that. And I think the philosophy I've been trying to pursue is, you know, let's continue wearing masks until we can all stop wearing masks, which is in about 3 weeks. The situation, this is really meant for public settings where we have children and we have people who might have chronic medical conditions, and we have a mix of vaccinated and unvaccinated people. You could make an argument that we should keep doing this even longer, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think that the governor is going to remove the restrictions statewide. And at that point, that will be the new normal. I mean, I'm not anticipating continuing this in Jefferson County past the point of that those statewide mandates. In the first KPTZ question, they raised this issue. Well, what about occupational settings? And are these requirements to wear masks in businesses and work sites where it's really not public facing, are those temporary or not? And that's largely up to the governor. It's that from a science standpoint and an occupational health standpoint, there's a strong argument to keep masking, have unvaccinated individuals continue masking indoors with other unvaccinated individuals. And the reason is to protect them. It's not their vaccinated coworkers, it's themselves and their unvaccinated coworkers. And that's what's distinctive about occupational health, is employers are required to have a safe workplace. And that even includes people who are voluntarily taking risks, that you still have to do everything you can to protect that individual. What labor and industry is going to do after June 30th, we're not exactly sure. The governor could just say, he wants all labor and industry restrictions removed, and he has the authority to make that decision. But from a strictly occupational health standpoint, you would predict that they would continue some restrictions, especially in high-risk settings, say in meatpacking plants where people are working together in very close proximity. And we know that the restrictions are going to continue to apply in places like hospitals and clinics and nursing homes where you have high-risk populations and it's the mission of the organization to take care of sick people. So they would have a disproportionate number of people with COVID infection. I predict that there probably will be some ongoing mandates with public transportation, especially as public transportation is at full capacity. But most masking will, and most COVID-related restrictions will disappear at the end of this month in Washington State. That's what it's looking like. But there'll still be COVID around. So it's the risk won't be completely gone, but those restrictions will be.
We've been giving a lot of thought to this at the county because we need to be planning for after June 30th. Do you have any sense if the governor or LNI will continue to allow businesses and government under his current rule, it follows business guidance. Do you have a sense if we will still be able to enact further restrictions? For example, we're considering continuing with having unvaccinated people continue the need to mask in order to protect our unvaccinated employees.
Yes, I think that will definitely be allowed. Washington State is not one of those states that's going to pass a law or an executive action that forbids jurisdictions to have more stringent requirements. There are states that have done that, but I do not anticipate we would be one of them. And so local authorities can always adopt something that's more stringent. Local health officer can adopt something that's more stringent. And, you know, and as long as we base it on the science, I think it is very defensible. Because the threat is not completely gone. It's diminished in some respects, but it's mutating as well. The threat is changing. You know, we would be in a lot better position if we did not have variant strains to deal with. Something that we really have to take seriously, and especially in terms of the risk to children. Now, that's something that's disturbing, but we're seeing it. We're seeing more cases of COVID in children now because there's a more infectious form of it in town, and we're seeing more hospitalizations in children. And this is a group I think we can all agree we need to continue to protect.
Yeah. Okay, anything else for Dr. Locke, or should we hand it off to Willie? Oh, did you have another question?
Answer another part of the employer question. It was sort of asking what does an employer do who chooses not to keep vaccination status records because they believe it's a medical privacy issue? Will employees need to mask indefinitely? And first of all, it's actually not a medical privacy issue. It's not a HIPAA violation. It's not a American Disabilities Act violation to ask an employee what their vaccination status is. They don't have to tell you. If they choose not to tell you, then you just treat them as if they're unvaccinated. But employers are allowed to gather that information because they have an important reason to gather it. It's to protect their employees. And then the final question was asked if it posed a personal situation that a couple is fully vaccinated, but they have a daughter out of town who has been told by her doctor not to get a COVID vaccination because she has a compromised immune system from fighting Lyme's disease. And My first advice to them is get a second opinion on that, because neither of those are reasons to not get vaccinated. In fact, both of them, you know, if you have a compromised immune system or if you have chronic Lyme's disease, both of those are good reasons to get vaccinated because you're increased risk of COVID complications. Although if you really do have a compromised immune system, the vaccine may not be fully effective. But I would definitely get a second opinion there. And then in terms of as parents, what to do, what the CDC guidance is, you know, if you're fully vaccinated, you can hang out with family members who are unvaccinated and unmasked as long as they have low risk of COVID complications. Mm-hmm. And in their situation, I'm not so sure of the answer to that, because if their daughter has increased risk of COVID complications, then they should continue to mask in their indoor encounters with their unvaccinated daughter, but for their daughter's sake. So their daughter's visit is not a risk to them, but they may be a risk to their daughter because she's unvaccinated, and the travel would be a risk for her as well. So the best solution to this is to get vaccinated. And that's it for my KPTZ questions.
Great. Thank you. Okay, Willie, it was great to see DEM at the farmer's market this weekend. Curious to hear how things are going in your world.
Our fearless vaccine operations team had set up at the farmer's market. We had a couple of pre-scheduled appointments for a single dose J&J vaccine. And then we had a grand total of 10 walk-ins at the farmer's market. So we had a handful of our doctors there to answer questions and kind of talk with folks and walk them through the process. And we had we hit double digits and had 10 folks decided, hey, well, they were there, might as well get that single dose J&J and be done with it. So we're very content with that. We had some good conversations with folks. I really appreciate our vaccine team. Again, thinking outside the box just a little bit and helping to make that happen. And I'm a strong team of volunteer doctors who are there, you know, lending their expertise, and obviously our nurses and other vaccine operators that actually administer the vaccine. But thank you to them. Thank you to everyone who, again, decided to walk up and grab the vaccine there and then the farmer's market for having us. We're going to likely try to be back potentially at the PT farmer's market, maybe Target Chimicum. We're going to have those conversations this week. But again, it was just great to be out there. Great to be able to talk to some folks. And again, 10 walk-ins. We're happy to every single shot we deliver, we consider a success. So I'm thankful there. Coming up this week, we also do have something that's a little bit new for us. I've reported in the past, we've partnered with the State Department of Health to help vaccinate homebound individuals. This week will be our first trial run of that capacity we'll be handling locally. So we'll have a few of our volunteer doctors taking care of some homebound folks and kind of taking our show on the road, so to speak. So we have five individuals we'll be doing later this week. And we'll be, while we're out and about, we'll be offering up this ability to a couple service organizations to see if they have folks who might not be able to get out and around. So we're have five on the docket there, but hope to expand that just a little bit. As always, as before, if you are homebound, you can't travel for whatever reason, please do call into our call center, 344-9791. Or if you have a friend or a family member, or if you provide service to someone who can't travel, do call us so we can get you on that list and help get you vaccinated. If you can travel but don't have transportation, do feel free to call us as well. We've partnered with a couple of different organizations who can help provide you transportation to a vaccine site to get you vaccinated as well. So if you just, again, as always, I'll offer up, if you're just confused and don't know what to do and you might need a little bit of help finding transportation, finding your vaccine appointment, call us. And we have volunteers who can walk you through that process, help connect you with resources, all that kind of fun stuff. So don't hesitate to reach out there. You know, after that, we are going to be doing a little bit of survey work over the next week or two. I'm trying to find days and times and ways and means to bring the vaccine to folks. So we'll be at a couple of local businesses. We'll have some volunteers out front. Looking to ask some folks questions on, you know, why they might not be willing to get the vaccine, and if they are, what days and times might work for them, what they might want, et cetera, before we plan kind of our next steps. We're really going to be targeting the crowd that we're seeing, you know, infection rates still up and we're seeing vaccination rates low in, and that's kind of younger working class folks, you know, the folks who might be working 6 or 7 days a week who can't get out and make time to go get vaccinated. Or, you know, the folks who might be hesitant for whatever reason. So we're looking at maybe a coffee shop or two, a hardware store. And again, just to kind of be out there with volunteers, ask some questions, you know, start building some data on the subject. So don't be surprised if you, you know, see a DEM volunteer wanting to ask you a few questions. We're not going to be obligating folks. If you want to go about your day, again, you can walk on by and we don't need to talk to everyone, but we're, again, trying to find new ways to bring the vaccine to folks. And we'd love to hear from you if you do see one of our volunteers out and about. Other than that, my KPTZ question this week, we're hearing from the business community that they're seeing an influx of folks from out of the area who may not know we still have a local masking mandate, or it might be locals who have heard the new CDC guidance and are maybe unaware or maybe a little bit resistant to continuing to mask locally. And so I'll offer up a couple things to those businesses. One, on the Jefferson County Public Health website, there is a packet of posters and signage and the like that informs folks that, hey, here's the local masking directive. You are still indeed required to wear a mask in these businesses, so please continue to do so. So head to the public health website and you can find that kind of whole informational signage packet for your use. So I'd really recommend that. I think a lot of these folks coming in from out of the area, it's more ignorance than anything. So again, signage is going to be really important to let them know as they're visiting and they're walking in. So do feel free to look at that post packet and use that to let folks know. The other thing is it really does often help if you have masks available for folks. So rather than, hey, you know, where's your mask? You need to put it on. It's just, hey, as a reminder, we are still requiring masks. Here's a mask. Will you still please wear this? And we do have masks available here at DEM. So if you need masks, we can provide them to you free of charge. You get in contact with us. We'll even deliver them to your business if needed. So reach out to us. We'll give you those masks. And I'm hoping between that signage, as well as having masks readily available, the vast majority of people will indeed comply, again, with a friendly reminder and a mask right there available to them. Hopefully that'll help nip that problem in the bud. Commissioner Brotherton.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I think it's important. And I've heard from a lot of stores recently that they are getting more people that are kind of rejecting the mask mandate as they come in and wondering about their own liability as it becomes increasingly difficult sometimes when people are resistant to wearing a mask inside. What kind of liability are they taking on for the small business? Are we going to come after a business if they're struggling to enforce the mask mandate? So I'm not sure if that's for Willie or Dr. Locke.
Yeah, that's mine. And the answer is absolutely not. We're not going to penalize the businesses. And, you know, I don't recommend that people get in an argument or a tussle over this. It's just, you know, request that people follow the mandate. I noticed yesterday a lot of the stores have, you know, boxes of disposable masks there, right at the sign, and that's great. But ultimately, if a person won't comply, it's really rude. The owner has a right to ask them to leave, and if they don't, to call the police. But I don't recommend doing that at this stage. They're really a threat to themselves, is what it comes down to. And pretty soon we're not going to be doing this at all.
Great. Thank you. And that echoes the advice I gave, you know, make the best practice, but we don't have to have a fight about this every time there's someone that's refuses to comply. Thank you.
Yeah. And thank you for jumping in there, Dr. Locke, again. And I know I'm preaching to the choir a little bit here on KPTZ. But again, my message was just that we have folks who are overworked in these businesses. They're at their wits' end. They've been absolutely busting their butts for the past year and a half, complying with, you know, a labyrinth of guidelines and new advice and all this kind of fun stuff. So, to the anti-masking folks, it's only a couple more weeks. Pretty please, let's just make it easy on our local employees and on our local businesses, and just put the mask on, and we'll be all out of these woods soon enough. But again, if you do need guidance or do need any help, again, we have signage, we have masks for you. Don't hesitate to reach out there. Other than that, Commissioner?
I heard that is the hotline being staffed a little bit less. Just want to let folks know if it's going to be a return phone call versus an answered phone call. Can you give us any status update on that?
Yeah, that's a good question. Thank you for that. And we have had a little bit of trouble finding consistent volunteers. We've had some of our leadership volunteers going on vacation. The weather's been a little bit nicer. Our hotline isn't staffed every day from 9 to 4 and really more 8:30 to 5 like it used to be. But again, it still remains functional. If you don't have someone who picked up, do leave a voicemail and we'll call you back within 24 hours. Great. So the hotline, it's still a resource for you. You'll still connect with someone. It might just not be an instantaneous pickup the way it was, especially since the hotline was initially created as a partnership with Jefferson Healthcare to help schedule for their kind of high volume vaccination line right as the vaccine was available to the general public. And now it's more for just kind of general questions and help for assistance and the occasional scheduling issue. So with volume way down, with our volunteers a little bit burnt out, it might be a voicemail and a call back, but we'll get back to you within 24 hours if you don't get someone right away. And then my final KPTZ question had to do with the masking guidance for employers. I think Dr. Locke touched a little bit on that earlier, but I will just say that we are going to be partnering with the chamber to put out a little bit more detail on the kind of masking guidance on public versus non-public facing. So we'll have that out here in the next day or two. So look forward to that as we look to kind of dig through that and provide some additional clarification. But again, a lot of that comes through LNI. So again, the state website has everything in detail. We're just going to hopefully put that in a little bit clearer language. So do look for that shortly.
And I agree with that. I'm going to try to clarify the local masking mandate that it's really not meant to apply to non-public facing settings. So people should follow the LNI requirements. There's actually, they have a statutory obligation to do that. And that is a law that has teeth. They can be fined for not following LNI rules.
In our meeting last Friday, discussing planning for reopening for the county, our treasurer had a great idea, which was to find out from the governor's office how they are preparing their employees to go back to work potentially as of July 1st. So I called our contact there and she said, I have no idea. We're not talking about it at all. So we're ahead of the curve.
And the very last thing I do want to mention is that in QFC, Safeway, and Tri-Area Pharmacies all continue to offer vaccinations. And then the Jefferson Healthcare, through their Express Clinic, they are offering single-dose J&J vaccine. It's walk-in. There's no appointment necessary. And it's open 7 days a week, 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. So 7 days a week. 9 a.m., 7 p.m., you can walk in, grab your J&J dose there at their Express Clinic. So do let folks know, have folks take advantage of that. That one's nice because it's open till 7, so you can get off work and go. If needed, you can go on the weekends whenever your day off is. So definitely do take advantage of that. And then otherwise, we do have the pharmacies and we do have our DEM and public health pop-up clinics. Popping up as we see a need. So lots of opportunities and options out there for you.
Willie, where is that Express Clinic?
That's actually on site at Jefferson Healthcare at 834 Sheridan Street, right at their on their main campus at their Express Clinic.
Okay.
Do you need to be a Jefferson Healthcare patient to use that clinic?
I don't know off the top of my head, but that's an excellent question. I don't believe so.
Yeah, my understanding is no, you do not. Kind of similar to the emergency room. You don't need to be a patient to use the emergency room.
Mark, the Express Clinic is right next to the emergency room. I happen to know because of my broken leg and I had to go to the Express Clinic.
Okay, thanks.
Greg?
Willie, I was just wondering, first, apologies. I was not able to deliver on my promise to take flyers down to Brennan prior to the Brennan event. But I was wondering, we didn't see you last week, but how'd it go over Memorial Day weekend in Brennan?
Oh, it went well. Let me see if I can dig up those numbers real quick since I don't have them off the top of my head. But we had a handful of walk-ins and were able to complete the vast majority of our second doses. So, again, just digging through my email real quick, not finding it. But again, I think we only had one or two people who didn't complete the series. And then I believe we had, I think maybe around 10, a little bit more walk-ins for that clinic. So it was successful, no worries at all. Getting the word out more always helps. But again, we still were able to get some folks down there. So thank you as always.
Great, thanks.
All right, anything else for Dr. Locke or Willie?
Thanks, you guys.
Yeah, thank you. We'll see you next week. Great.